Hi, this is David Sweet, founder of Focus Core, and I'd like to invite you to take a look at our 2024 salary guide. It's a great resource for hiring APAC professionals wanting to know about the salaries for executive positions within Japan, as well as finding out information of what's important to attract the best talent in Japan. The salary guide is found on our website under About Salary Guide 2024. I hope you find this information useful for you and your company. Now, on to our podcast.
Keep running. I hear you're still running.
I'm still running, yeah. 100K a week, I think. Wait, when are you going to be out running with me? We'll run through the streets of Shinjuku together.
Man, I haven't left my days of enjoying a single malt, so I'll stay there.
Welcome to the Focus Core podcast. Today I'm joined by Regional Finance Director for Hilton Worldwide International, Manesh Ranaga. As you listen, you'll understand why I really like Manesh. He's warm, friendly, open, the personification of great hospitality. Focus Core has often held beautiful networking events at Hilton properties. So I was excited to sit down with Manesh and chat about his life and career. In this episode, Manesh shares about his life from being from Fiji, moving to Australia, Malaysia, Singapore, and now being in Japan. He talks about the hospitality industry then and now, and about finance within hospitality. I hope you enjoy our talk as much as I did. Now I give you Manesh Ranaga. Welcome, Manesh. Could you get us started with a summary of your background that brought you to Japan?
My history starts from Fiji, small island country. I'm an Indian Fijian, born in Fiji. My grandparents came from India. And I guess I joined the hospitality industry because of Fiji. It's a great destination. People look at Fiji and, I guess it's a paradise within the world environment. And on top of that, did you know we're the largest producers of bottled water in the world now? Fiji water is really popular now. It's one of the most popular bottled water.
Yeah? I did not know that.
Yeah. It's equal to the French bottled waters that compete. But yeah, I'm just a kind of a fact-finding thing about Fiji.
Nice.
The largest export in Fiji, water. That's, I guess, unusual, no? Besides yes. Tourism. So outside that, I grew up in Fiji, loving the place. I educated in Australia, came back to Fiji, and I joined the great, the ITT Sheraton in those days. It was a big company.
Yeah.
And I'm a small guy joining a big company. Wow, it was really amazing. And in those days, for example, those hotels were considered quite luxurious because to build something somewhere so isolated by these global investors, you obviously clearly know that very rich people can come to those places. It takes a while to get there. And in those days, just remember, if you want to fly from the US to Australia, you had to stop in Fiji to refuel.
Okay.
So you could not fly directly. So it became a major airspace thing in those days. Pan American Airlines, those airlines that used to exist, Continental, all had to land in Fiji. These are kind of interesting notes. And that's how we became a global center, I guess, in terms of landing rights. Also, it's a British Empire, part of the British.
It's a Commonwealth,
right? Yes, I was going to say empire, but we became independent in 1968. And you know what? My dad's met the Queen. We have to meet her. Yeah, she was. Because, if you look at the British movie, this series on Netflix, The Crown, right?
Yeah.
That's Fiji when they go and visit Africa and they go to Fiji and Australia.
Yeah.
Prince Diana and them. So my dad was a government officer and used to meet these people on arrival at the tarmac of the airport. So that's how my exposure to the global scene came from.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, and Prince Charles was the one who declared Fiji independent from the British. So he had to fly over and do that. So this is the kind of the the environment I lived in. Outside that, I was a big fan of just living life. I was a bit lazy.
I like a fan of living life, just a bit lazy.
That's me. Fiji is has its innocent way of living, right? That's my point. And I think when I went to Australia, I finally had to put my head down and get my Bachelor of Commerce degree.
Yeah.
And then come back to Fiji, and I joined an accounting firm called Price Waterhouse.
Yeah.
But didn't really like doing accounting in the environment of an audit firm. So my dad was freaking out, because I was thinking, I said, I'm going to resign. I'm going to leave. And he said, if you leave Fiji, you'll be like every other Indian that's leaving Fiji, right? The talent drain. And my dad was very committed to the country. He said, let me see if I can get some advice. And he connected with someone, and that someone connected with the financial controller of Sheraton. And he said, well, I'm looking for an assistant finance person.
Yeah.
So my dad said, go and apply. The reason that I went and applied was I went back to Australia to do my postgraduate in tourism management.
Okay.
Which was a very, very new degree, or like a very, very new course.
Yes.
And because I just started it, Sheraton was excited to look at me coming back to Fiji and joining them. So I got hired. So when I applied for the job, I thought I was applying for assistant accountant. What I didn't know was the job interview was for assistant financial controller.
It's different then.
Yeah, I got the job. So, nice. And wow, that's the first time I got introduced to what you call the Sheraton Global Standards, right, of running hotels. So Sheraton is a brand that's everywhere, right? It was in Europe. It was somewhere occasionally in Africa.
Yeah.
It's been in the Middle East. So to run a hotel with a common platform with multiple countries was just mind-blowing for me. I learned a lot. And for me, this was an encyclopedia I could memorize. So I was enjoying myself. And then the best part about Sheraton was I got to get free breakfast in the morning. I could go to the hotel and have a nice breakfast and feel like a tourist.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I could go and have a beer if I wanted, at the kind of the bar next to the beach. So,
nice.
So I felt this was a good finance job. I couldn't complain. That's where my background is. It's a long background story, but it's a good story. And then quickly, I spent 9 years there. We bought the island. When I say we, my owning company, the Sheraton, then became Starwood. Then Starwood bought the whole island. So it was like a Nusa Dua in Indonesia.
Yep.
Denarau was the equal of Nusa Dua of Indonesia in Bali. Where you have integrated resorts. They have five integrated resorts with a golf course, marina, and this designed for that. Mm-hmm. So I came from that background, and I kind of rose up the ranks quite quickly, because when Starwood, which bought over ITT Sheraton hotel segment, we owned the hotels outright. So that was the catch there. So we became, before we were a managed hotel by a Japanese company called Long-Term Japanese Credit Bank.
Yeah.
And then they went bankrupt, or they bubble burst, and then they sold it to Starwood Hotels, on which then I became engaged. Thereafter, 9 years, I left for Australia, and I bought a pizza shop.
A pizza shop?
Yeah.
What's that?
So this is funny. Pizza shop and ice cream shop. Two things. I kind of got tired of hotels. And it was in Gold Coast. So I decided to go and settle in Gold Coast. Opened a pizza shop and an ice cream shop with my brother-in-law. At that time, my brother-in-law, he was an Austrian, and he was a pastry chef working with me in Hilton. And he married my wife's sister. So we kind of four of us. So we decided that, hey, there's some money in bread and ice cream. So we went for it.
Nice.
But then 4 months later, the shop was, the business was doing well. And my brother-in-law was running it, and we had people running it. But now I was working there 24/7. And it was hard. At that time, the business was hard because you know, when you open something in a new suburb, Australian population doesn't grow fast, right? It's very spread out. So, you know, the demographics took a while to get in there. So in the meantime, after 4 months, I guess I started looking for a job, and the company that I left rehired me as a regional director of finance in Malaysia, based in Malaysia, in charge of Malaysia, Philippines, Vietnam, Bangladesh, India, and those countries, you know, that's a whole region there, Brunei, Cambodia. So I moved to Malaysia, and my wife's Singaporean. I remember that time. So I moved to Malaysia, and all the hotels were bankrupt because this is when George Soros did the great currency risk or did a hedge that basically destroyed Malaysia's currency base. So most of my owners were bank syndicates.
Wow. Okay.
So that's an interesting journey I had, where I had to restructure the hotel business. And at the same time, we were the first international hotel to open in Vietnam. And my 30% shareholder was a communist party, which made me very nervous. You know, I could be. So it was Vietnam, opening a hotel, opening two hotels, one in Hanoi, one in Ho Chi Minh City, which is Saigon. And then at the same time, you know, in charge of a hotel in Philippines, which was owned by one of the wealthiest mall owners. And then Bangladesh. I went to Bangladesh with my boss. Huh. My God, that was an experience. The owner was the government of Bangladesh. So everything was very politically driven. But it was a branded hotel for the first time, Sheraton in Bangladesh. And what an experience, I have to say. This is a long story, but to cut it short, they took me to see how they dye dyeing cloth, yep. Right, the color and all that. Mm-hmm. But they didn't see what I saw, which is that the whole river was black with filth, right? And there were kids swimming in it. And I was like, OMG. Look, it is what they are, and they're really amazing. They're very smart people on the educated level. They're very smart. I don't deny that. After that, I continued to excel in terms of, you know, trying to push myself. And the president of Asia Pacific, a guy called Miguel Ko, said to me, Minesh, do you want to go to Japan? So I said, I thought Japan, you need to speak Japanese. My mindset was, who am I to go to Japan? Right? I can't even cross the road without saying hello or something, right? and not even read the signs. And for me, this was like a country which is overcrowded, or the trains are busy. And I just thought it was, he said, well, Minesh, you can do this.
When was this?
What's 2008? I have to remember the dates. I can't. This was 16 years ago, minus 16 years. And he said, no, go. Why don't you go to Japan? We're acquiring a big asset as a management contract. Have a look, put a proposal together. So, you know, we're looking at winning a management agreement. So I went to Japan to then put a proposal where Starwood would manage a large integrated resort in Miyazaki.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Where we had the world's largest Guinness Book of Record indoor wave pool called the Ocean Dome, which is, by the way, demolished.
Yeah.
We had the Ocean 45 Hotel, which is now the Sheraton Grand Ocean Resort.
Yeah.
And then we had 99 golf holes, of which one of them is the rated number two or number three best golf course in Japan, the Phoenix Country Club. And then we had the Tom Watson golf course next to it. And condominium, there was a zoo, and there was a botanical garden. And this was an asset that Ripplewood, which is a venture company or a private equity company, that bought the bank, Shinsei Bank, many years ago.
Remember that.
And bought Japan Telecom many years ago. Japan Telecom today is SoftBank, by the way. So the company that I was working for bought all these assets, and they bought this hotel in Miyazaki. And they had asked Starwood to manage everything with Troon Golf as our partners. So I went there as a managing director first, and then CFO later.
Mm.
And we had to do a turnaround, basically.
Yep.
So that was a huge experience. I mean, my God. So I finally moved then. And that's where I met my lovely wife, Makiko, who was the only person who could speak English. Oh, my God. I think 0.05% of the population speaks English.
Yeah, Miyazaki's a bit, bit extreme. In that sense, right?
Yeah. Yep, a bit extreme. So I went there and I spent a great 5 years. It was the best 5 years of my life.
Beautiful town.
Oh, but the not only town, but Kyushu is, you know, the I experienced Kyushu, Beppu, Kurokawa, the great onsens, drive-throughs, the Aso Mountain, and just amazing stuff there. And then Fukuoka, Nagasaki, and just so much to drive and see.
Yep.
And so humble people. Had great 5 years. And then moved to Fukuoka, where GIC, which is a sovereign fund of Singapore, owns the what you call the Seahawk Dome, right? The Seahawk.
Yes, Seahawk. Yeah.
And then the JAL Seahawk Hotel was converting to Hilton Seahawk Hotel, and I was part. So I joined Hilton after that. I left Sheraton after many years, and because I wanted to stay in Japan, and Sheraton at that time wanted to move me out of Japan. And I had a young kid and I wanted him to be more Japanese first. I decided to stay in Japan. I joined with Hilton.
Nice.
And I spent 3 years in Fukuoka, converting that hotel into a Hilton DNA hotel, which is a very successful property now. Thereafter, I moved to Tokyo Hilton, Shinjuku. Yep. And that's when the Fukushima incident happened and a lot of people were leaving. Tokyo was pretty empty.
Yep.
You know, things were pretty negative then. I came at that time and obviously was designed to change the business. And I was also partially in charge of the JKM region at a number two level. And then 3 years ago, I took over JKM totally as the regional director of finance. And I've been here since in Japan, in Tokyo.
Wow. It's quite an odyssey that you've had from Fiji
yes.
to Malaysia, Bangladesh, Australia, Miyazaki into Tokyo. What right now, you know, with what you're doing, what's your biggest challenge that you're facing in your role right now, and how you're tackling it?
I think the biggest challenge is to maximize our cash. And before we used to talk about profit or EBITDA or anything else. Ultimately, now cash is king. We need to preserve cash or maximize the cash, right? And or stretch it to a level. So, and I think that's where I'm sitting every day. I'm looking at the cash balance. We need to borrow money, obviously, through our current stage because we've had 24 months of this. And remember, just to give you an image, our hotels in that Hilton Tokyo, for example, is 825 room hotel, right? That's a large hotel. Tokyo Bay also is 830 odd rooms. And if Disney decides to lock down its gates entries, it affects the whole Tokyo Bay setup, right?
Yeah, sure.
And those things are, and we've got to manage it. And at the same time, you have to understand, Hilton is a US entity in Japan, where we're focusing on the way Japanese culture and Japanese business works. You know, and you've got to have this balance. And therefore, laying people off is a big issue of discussion, you know, for example.
Yep.
And at the same time, the Japanese government has been really proactive in supporting the businesses in Japan under the COVID environment. I got to give them like 100% marks. They're doing an amazing job supporting us as enterprises. And I would never floor them. They've done a great job.
That's great. With in your field of expertise, what's a common myth that you find that
common myth?
Yeah.
You want me to say this? Okay, let me. So common myth: when I go overseas and have a beer at a bar, and I meet an Australian friend of mine, and he says, "Well, how's it going, mate?" And I go, yeah, good. And we're both having a beer. And he said, what do you do? So I work in Japan. And then first they go, wow, right? First of all, it's a big wow. Wow, I love Japan. And most Australians love Japan for the way the culture is there, right? The cultural impact, the neon lights. Culture, neon lights, and skiing. Number one, they love skiing in Australia. And therefore, opinion is technology. So let me go on technology. They believe Japan is so advanced at a level that, Manesh, you must be really living in the world of technology. Now, here it is. When it comes to the hotel industry, we are not technologically advanced because in the hotel industry, it's about service.
Yeah.
And we are labor intensive. We greet people at doors. We greet people at the elevator. We bow down 300 times and we need to show that experience, and the cost of labor here is very high, right?
Yeah.
And we don't use technologies to say, you know, we have earplugs which say, oh, no, we'll send you the dish upstairs. But at the same time, there are some hotels that have automated check-in. So there's two extreme views, right? There's the traditional Japanese way of service in the ryokan style,
yeah,
where there is this people contact that we at hotels want to do. And then there's advanced where, you know, if you go to a U.S. hotel, the guy, the lady who checks you in will give you your water bottle, right? Here's
yeah, sure.
your two free waters, and you walk with it. You would never do that in Japan.
No. But they would charge you for it once you get into,
yes.
get into the room.
Right? So I can see the humbleness of the Japan service standards are so good, yeah. so high that I don't want to take it away. So I think there is this myth that as much as we are technologically advanced, things like back of house functions, we are very paper oriented, very paper driven, which is what I'm trying to change. I'm trying to change things to paperless technology at the back of house or hotel structure.
And how are you doing that?
We're automating things. We're putting things on PDF. When we hire people, there's a piece of paper. I want to digitize it. And this is the change we're going through on a back of house function. We love paper in Japan.
Oh, and you probably still have fax.
Yes, yes. Oh,
yes.
So JTB, for example, still sends faxes to us.
Yeah.
And they will have to sooner or later start to send us what you call emails or digital things. So far, when they do send us faxes, it comes into a digital form now, as opposed to, you know, this rolling things. But fax is still common. We still fax our purchase orders.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, anybody who's not familiar with hospitality in Japan, it's when you get to some of these Japanese companies like JTB,
yeah,
they're quasi-governmental agencies.
Yes, yeah.
And it's very domestic and still primitive in a lot of ways, right?
Absolutely. The question is this. I would maybe re-edit the word primitive by saying that they are focused on the domestic enlarged business, and they are all in the same platform. And this platform, why change it if it works? And if you want to change it, there is an intense energy to make sure that every microscopic process is dealt with.
Mm.
And this can take a long time to do.
Yeah. Do you find that that also segments a lot of the hospitality across Japan, so that in some ways we, as a country, we lose some of the opportunity for inbound or even domestic travel because it's so segmented. There's not a coordination between prefectures, for example, to coordinate those travels to create an experience where someone might fly into Japan, but might have that whole tour through, take them to Kyoto, to Miyazaki, towards, you know, just a different destinations.
I think two things are happening. There is an age, the two age categories, as I call it. There is an older segment that obviously still goes to JTB and HIS, for example, and continue to do this, what you call one-stop shop.
Mm.
And the whole thing revolves around these brochures, you know, the summer and winter brochures. And if I was living in Miyazaki when I was with my wife took me to JTB to buy a package. And I was like, I've never done this. I normally buy my airline alone. Then I call the hotel directly and make my booking and online. And my wife's like, no, JTB is much better. So clearly that, in maybe 10 years ago, JTB was a little bit more competitive because they had what you call the purchasing power.
Mm.
And e-commerce, like online stuff, was not so strong in Japan, specifically in Japan. But today, that has changed. That has totally flipped around. However, I feel these OTAs need to evolve. And I think it's a question of time. There will be a slight delay, but they'll evolve. And I see JDB moving in the, you know, evolving into an e-commerce giant in the future. But ultimately, we have to evolve. So everything is online, less at the shops. So a lot of these shops and malls that are in the countryside will continue to succeed because still the culture is in the countryside, like Miyazaki, is to go to an Aeon mall and make a booking. And there's an excitement in there. You know, the journey to go to the mall, old couples get out of their house, otherwise, you know, and it's an event for them. Whereas for us younger people in Tokyo, Osaka, I want it on my iPhone. I want booking.com. And I want to just make a booking or EQ.com, for example. EQ.com is phenomenal in the way it's doing business. Its online platform is now so powerful with the younger Japanese in F&B, rooms booking. And it's owned by, I believe, SoftBank. I think it's owned by SoftBank. But it's an amazing platform.
That's great.
It controls a lot of our e-commerce revenues.
What's the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
Oh, my God. I have learned to listen and not bark out things in the onset. There's two types of culture. And I mean, it's my Indian brain, I guess. I tend to just speak things out when I arrived first in Japan. But I have to learn something. I've learned to listen. This is important. I tell you this. When I sit in meetings and sometimes you think that I can add up, I can see things. But at certain points, there is great worthiness in listening to a Japanese executive explaining to you why he wants to do what. Because from my point of view, sometimes it doesn't make sense. But most times, there is an inner meaning in there that I need to kind of listen to. And it takes a while for me to see that. And therefore, investing the time listening is important. This is something I have had a hard time doing when I first arrived. I was a bit young and maybe brash. But today, I'm much more calm and patient and much more observant.
That's great. That's insightful. I think when I speak to a lot of executives in foreign executives in Japan, and from my experience in Japan, one of the commonalities that I see is that there's a lot of not listening. You have to come into Japan, make sales, and follow HQ and just make sales as fast as possible. And there's a little regard to what the lay of the land is and how things are done within not only Japan, but in an organization.
Usually
one or two important people who know what's going on and they're long term and they're not an expat. And if you, as an expat, don't tap into that and understand and listen, you lose so much. And oftentimes it is the financial person who stays and has that longevity. And to miss that is to miss a lot within a company.
One more element that I found that helps disarm people at the Japanese and Western management style is sense of humor. The other thing is sense of humor. I have a strong sense of humor that allows, and when I say sense of humor, not only just the Western sense of humor, but the Japanese sense of humor, which I've observed in many ways, and throw that into the mix while we are meeting each other, and that allows that connection to happen, right? So the sense of humor also disarms a lot of that barriers that I feel. So I'm always laughing, smiling, I'm not so serious. People get a little bit more relaxed in trying to approach me.
What, in your opinion, is the most important personality trait for someone that would want to work in your industry?
You got to love and understand human psychology and people. You know, human behavior, people. This is hotel industry is unique. We are here to give you an experience, right? So experience is what? What is experience? It's a feeling, right? And it's a journey from the moment you enter the airport to the room and then downstairs to the meal to the type of food you eat. I mean, there are so many touch points that I could screw up. It's not funny. So I think we need what you call naturally affinity people, liking people, right? You can't have a grumpy person wake up in the morning with no personality, right? Personality defined by, hi, how's it going? In the Japanese way and in a very formal way, and but also the same way, you know, resourceful way that we understand them. Because if we don't understand them, my God, they will, I mean, Japanese customers specifically never complain until the end of the journey. So you don't know until the end of the journey. Mm.
Yeah, experience is key, especially in Japan, but in general, I remember, well, in my book, Sweet Sales, one of the things that I highlighted was experience. Because, yeah, for example, you can go to Universal Studios or you can go to Disneyland. They're,
yes,
you know, the price is comparable.
Yeah.
The experience is different for, yes, a theme park. And one's not better than the other, but you're paying for an experience to have that. And how a lot of companies don't think, what is the experience they want their customer to have?
Exactly.
And I think that's a huge thing that can be learned from, for any industry, from hospitality.
Yep. And talking about experience specifically, noting that we are an international brand, which is platformed to work in all global locations, we need to localize this global company into what you call the Japanese system, right? And so, and sometimes we as expats think, well, we've got to cut that yukata in the room. No one uses a yukata in the room. And then suddenly, 2 days later, 35 Japanese guests go, where is the yukata, right? And you go, oh my God, you actually use it? And yes, they do. And it's as simple as that. Another classic example is, you know, things like the amenities, right?
Yep.
If you don't have a toothbrush, you're not a Japanese hotel.
Yeah.
You know, as simple as that. So it's these little things that all add up.
That's interesting, because now I would think, I would expect a yukata or a bathrobe or something to sleep in and a toothbrush, yeah, when I go into any hotel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We've gotten spoiled in Japan.
But in these days, internationally, a lot of things have been kind of, you know, come to what you call simple, basic things, right? And if you ask this concierge for a toothbrush, they'll send it up to you, but they won't put it in the room. See the point?
Yeah, sure.
Thinking that 95% will use their own toothbrush. Mm. But for the other point, let me emphasize another point. The body lotion.
Yeah.
Very few Japanese use body lotion of the hotel because they have a higher quality of body lotion they travel with. For we have a high level of wastage of this. You know, it's interesting.
Okay.
So one of the things that we are working on is, you know, these small bottles,
such
are plastic, right? So I come from Fiji. I do not like plastic. I love my blue water, blue ocean.
Sure.
So I think one of the things we're going to do this year is going to put these racks where you have the pumps.
Yep.
But they're going to be locked, so nothing can be added in, and they'll be quite safe. And so the pumps will reduce the number of plastic disposals we do.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
With I know for some guests, they tend to try those little bottles as samples, right?
Yes, so
it's okay, we'll try the body lotion. If I like it, then I'll want to go and buy it in the shop or whatever.
Exactly.
What's one lesson your job has taught you that you think everybody should learn some point in their life?
One lesson. There are many lessons. Look, the one thing I have learned is the appreciation of cultural diversity. I mean, this is a little bit complex, but I'm going to say it anyway. For example, I have a Hindu religion background, right? I went to a Catholic school. My wife is a Buddhist. So my son actually asked 1 year ago, Dad, what religion am I?
Yeah.
So one thing that I learned, because I grew up saying, this is my religion, this is who I am. My parents said, there's no discussion.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to the temple and sit for 4 boring hours with flames coming down my throat and, you know, the things in India, which I just don't understand, right?
Yeah.
And today I have the power to say to my son, you can be any religion you want.
Nice. Yep.
And this is something I learned living in Japan. And because Japan is such a peaceful religion society, they appreciate the Shinto religion and the Buddhist religion both at the same time. They don't feel each is exclusive, or I am this or I am that. You know, there's an overlap of people who say they're Buddhist or Shinto. And I find, and then you notice all public holidays have no religious connotation here. Yeah? Yeah. They have what you call seasonal or weather connotations. Fantastic. And when you observe all this, you understand that this is a very peaceful approach.
That's great.
So I find Japan has made me see all this far more at a deeper level than I would normally would if I was living in Malaysia, which was a Muslim-dominated country, for example, where when I sat in the taxi the first time I arrived in Malaysia, taxi driver had a photo of Bin Laden, and he was a fan of him, right? So I said, please stop the taxi, I need to get off. And I didn't criticize his view. I just said, please stop the taxi, I choose not to travel with you, right? That's where certain things scare the hell out of me.
There you go. Well, yeah, speaking of holidays, that's probably why we're both wearing pink. It's Hina no Matsuri, Girls' Day today, right?
We're both
in pink for listeners who can't see us. We're both in pink and very handsome.
Yes, thank you.
So let's round off our conversation with, if you were going to choose another occupation other than your own, what would you try?
You know what? I have thought about this several times. One was the airline industry, which I don't know what I would do in an airline industry. The airline industry sounded like fun when I was younger. So my first thought was airline industry because of the hotel affinity. So many airline crews stay in hotels, and they seem to, I didn't say they don't have an easy life. Their traveling is not easy, right? You know, it's not fun. Right. Yep. But I wanted to have an office job where I don't sit on the airline and then travel for free, right? That was it. I could travel to Paris for the weekend and it would be amazing, right? That thought. But that died very quickly because I cannot sit for 8-9 hours on a plane. It's just hard. Uh-huh. But the one industry that is still attracting me is the hospital industry.
Really? Why is that?
Because hospitals are like hotels.
Mm.
But they're far more complex. They're far more intrinsically active. Hospitals will never be slow, right? Hospitals are always going to be full capacity at some level. So I find it intriguing that if I had to choose another path, which I can't, I'm too late in my career now, I would go into hospitals.
Nice. It's so important right now, especially with
what's going on. And I think I would meet amazingly educated people, but also amazingly interesting patients. I mean, I think there would be a different world out there.
Would you continue doing finance within?
Yeah, I do enjoy my job. And I'm trying to be a finance person that's engaged in a way that allows me not to be what you call the standard label, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, everyone asks us for money, I say no. Which is something more, it's more of a commercial relationship, right? We general managers and I have. Mind you, it's not an easy job. I do have to be sometimes hard on certain facts of achieving things. We've got to push that line, right? That line to the edge so that we get the best out of each other. And business is continuously evolving. So for example, I'll give you a simple thing. You know, when you give a pay rise of 2% to the whole hotel team, and your room revenue doesn't grow by more than 2%, you will always be going backwards.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just the fundamental mathematics. And then you understand inflation, price of oil. This year, everything is going up, right? You can see that the government is pushing for wages to go up to as high as 5%. Bonuses need to come back. We need to recoup our losses over 2 years. So there's so many competing interests at this stake at the moment. So this year is going to be a very, very interesting year of balancing the needs of everybody.
That's great. We started our conversation with me saying that you're a great business development person. And I think it speaks wonders as being a financial professional that you are, but you are very much an ambassador for the brand. You do a lot to bring in different projects into the company, which I think is fantastic. And
thank you.
Your sales team should appreciate you as well. And it sounds like, I mean, we had talked previously, Hilton's growing. You have the Waldorf brand is growing.
Yes.
So talk a little bit around that.
This is our highest luxury brand in terms of our brands that we own. We have the Hilton, we have the Conrad, and then on terms of the luxury brand, it's the Waldorf Astoria. Mm. The first Waldorf Astoria was in New York City. That's where this hotel is a legacy hotel where the greats of who have been there. And the first one, so Japan is having its first two Waldorfs, one in obviously in Tokyo and one in Osaka, which are two key cities.
Yep.
And I'm really looking forward to this brand coming into Japan. It's going to put us in the same level as the Four Seasons, you know, and those like Mandarin Oriental. And so I am really excited. I think these brands will put Hilton into three tiers of what do you call income streams, and luxury brand, mid scale, and upper mid scale. So I think our brands in Japan are doing well.
Mm.
One opportunity that we feel will really happen, and this is called the Hilton Garden Inn. This is our first focused hotel brand. It's going to open in Kyoto end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a focused hotel, so it's a three-star kind of image, but actually it's a hotel that's very successful, similar to other smaller brands we have in Japan, right? You have many smaller brands like the Mitsui Garden Inn, for example.
Sure.
So we are coming to that market, and I think that market is huge.
Yeah.
It's huge and highly profitable, and a lot of people are focused on that market. So we have our first HGI, Hilton Garden Inn, opening in Kyoto. It's going to be a beautiful hotel.
Looking forward to seeing those.
Yeah.
The first hotel I stayed at in Japan, and my stop was the Hilton in Shinjuku.
Okay.
I came over on JET program 24 years ago, whenever. So it was nice then. My favorite though is the Hilton in Okinawa.
It is nice, yes. For now we have two Hiltons. We have a few Hiltons. We have the one you're talking about is Hilton Chatan, and there's another one in Hilton Sasseko. We just opened 18 months ago. So then we're opening a new one next year in Miyako Island, by the way.
Nice.
We're opening, I think, late next year.
Beautiful.
Very nice beachfront.
Well, thank you so much for visiting with me today, Manesh. It's been wonderful to chat with you.
David, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.